I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
1.7 trillion dollars is the cost of what little we know about Kamala Harris's economic plan. It's amazing how little she's actually put out. Yeah. Her entire plans consist of, we're going to give you $25,000 toward your down payment. We're going to somehow force grocery stores to charge the price, you know, the prices we want, to change the prices we want. And two other things Trump and J.D. Vance have proposed.
Yeah.
Right? The child tax credit and the tips.
Yeah. No tax on tips for, you know.
Right. So half of her economic plan, if you can even call it that, was just ripped off from Trump.
Yeah.
So the New York Post does an article. Kamala Harris unveils economic plan, including a whopping $1.7 trillion in handouts. Okay. We're already paying almost the same in interest as we are for the military, which happens to be our biggest expense. So any idea, anybody, how, like, where will the money come from to pay for this? Well, they actually caught up to Kamala Harris. Listen to this. CNN actually caught her. They managed to get close to her. They asked her this question. So there have been almost no questions answered by Her Highness. This is how this went. Where will the money come from? It's almost $2 trillion beyond the price, beyond the cost of the budget. Now, keep in mind, how do we get, what kickstarted inflation? Kamala Harris being the tie-breaking vote on what? $2 trillion in additional money beyond the budget. Remember that? That we had to pay for by printing and borrowing. That's what kickstarted. We ended up at 9% inflation. So here she goes, almost another $2 trillion. Unfunded, no money to cover it or cover the deficits it creates. Where will the money come from?
You unveiled your economic policies last week.
Yeah.
Can you explain how you're going to pay for those? And can you give us a sense of what other policies you want to unveil going forward?
Sure. Well, I mean, you just look at it in terms of what we are talking about, for example, around children and the child tax credit and extending the EITC. That is, it's at $6,000 for the first year of a child's life. The return on that investment in terms of what that will do and what it will pay for will be tremendous. We've seen it when we did it in the first year of our administration. We reduced child poverty by over 50%. So that's a lot of the work. And then what we're doing in terms of the tax credits, we know that there's a great return on that investment. When we increase home ownership in America, what that means in terms of increasing the tax base, not to mention property tax base, what that does to fund schools, again, return on investment. I think it's a mistake for any person who talks about public policy to not critically evaluate how you measure the return on investment. When you are strengthening neighborhoods, strengthening communities, and in particular the economy of those communities, and investing in a broad-based economy, everybody benefits, and it pays for itself.
It's free. So we can write a $25,000 check to 4 million families, Lee.
It almost sounded like she was endorsing trickle-down economics.
I know, and it pays for itself. So the money just comes in, and you don't have to worry about it. She's done this before, by the way.
Yeah, and none of this answered the question
no,
at all.
No, that's my point. That's why I played the whole thing.
Yeah.
She didn't answer the question. She does not know. She doesn't know or care, or there is no answer. And I'll tell you what the answer is. We'll borrow it and print it.
Exactly.
And $1.7 trillion is almost the same amount as the American Rescue Act. She was the tie-breaking vote. We got 9% inflation. So the answer is no answer. And by the way, she has used that tactic before. I saw her use it in 2020 when she did an interview on how to pay she wanted to get rid of, she wanted to have basically Medicaid for all. Like, she wanted to get rid of private insurance. How will you pay for that? And she starts, she does this. She babbles on about return on investment.
Yeah.
Well, what's the investment, though?
Right.
And I don't know.
And where's the return?
Exactly. What is the return exactly? She doesn't know. I'm amazed she didn't just keep going. I'm amazed she tried this, but she doesn't answer because there's no answer to it.
I think the only return is they return her to office. I think that's what she's looking for.
But no, and I mean, these plans are a joke. If Donald Trump put this out, this is a joke. How are you going to pay for this? What is the source of money? Is it borrowing? Is it printing? Or is it cash? And if so, where's the cash coming from? You're going to raise taxes? We know that doesn't work. When you raise taxes, money to the revenue to the Treasury goes
right.
down.
Mm-hmm.
It's counterintuitive,
right.
but it does. It goes down. Why? Because there's less economic activity when you raise taxes. So you can't just make up the difference by having more rich people pay. Democrats might want you to think that, but you can't. By the way, did you see Gretchen Whitmer take a beating? Poor thing. She did a turn on NBC News. She's the governor of Michigan on NBC News as a surrogate for Kamala. I don't think she'll do that again. She couldn't answer any of these questions. And in her defense, I don't think I could answer these questions if my job was to make Kamala look good. There's no answer to them, like this one.
When she ran in 2020, you will recall she called for banning fracking, supporting single-payer health care, eliminating private health insurance. The campaign says she no longer supports those positions. The Trump campaign, though, is calling her a chameleon. Do you think that Vice President Harris needs to do more to explain why she has shifted on those positions?
Well, any, I think, insult from the Trump campaign is laughable when you think about his years in office and who he fought for.
And I'd play more of it, Lee, if there was more. She never answered the question.
Yeah, I'm really getting surprised at how far the left-wing media is going and attacking this whole campaign here from the Harris-Walls campaign. I mean, they're going after him. They're actually doing their job for a change.
You know, the only thing I can figure is that they are seeing or hearing about the actual internal polling on this stuff, and they're mad because they're losing. I can't think of any other way or any other reason that they would conduct actual acts of journalism. But what you just heard there, like, you never hear that. That was a real interview.
Right.
Like a Republican would be subjected
exactly.
to. Exactly. Can you imagine if we had that in this country, how much better off we'd be?
Yeah.
But you could tell the frustration there. Okay, you're here. Kamala won't show up. You are here. You answer the question. And it went downhill from there. I can't show you this because this is radio, Lee, obviously. She had total deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
Gretchen Whitmer did. She didn't expect real questions. And they just kept coming and coming and coming. Here we go. Take a listen. This is another one of these she couldn't answer.
Well, let me ask you about her running mate, Tim Walz, and particularly on the issue of immigration. Obviously, some of his policies in his state have come into focus. He signed into law initiatives allowing undocumented immigrants to apply for driver's licenses, free tuition at public universities, and enroll in the state's free health care program for low-income residents. Would you like to see the Harris administration adopt those same policies, Governor?
Well, I can tell you, you know, Tim Walz is a pragmatic guy. He's a Midwesterner just like me. And I think some of the wonderful things he's done in Minnesota resonate with, you know, Americans in all states.
She didn't answer. Do you want to see that national? Well, look at the time. I didn't think I'd be getting real questions here. How much longer do we have? That's exactly what that sounded like.
Gee, look at the time. I still find it a bit ironic that they have a vice president named Walz and they are opposed to Walz.
To Walz.
So.
Right. No Walz. Well, not entirely now, because they do want to put them around the, you know, they have put them
exactly,
around the DNC.
Yes. When it comes to, you know, protecting Walz, they want Walz. But when it's about protecting the American people, they don't want Walz.
Right. So, and of course, the irony of that will be completely missed.
Of course. Yeah.
On pretty much everyone there.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, I'm looking forward to getting this. This to me is going to be very interesting today. Zero Hedge is reporting that Bureau of Labor Statistics report's coming out today. They're going to do a jobs adjustment for an entire year.
Yeah, that should be interesting.
1 million jobs erased. Gone.
Which so they never were.
Yeah. In other words, they kind of made them up. I've said before, it's not unusual for them to adjust jobs numbers up or down, like a few months after they come out and they get more specific. Adjust them up a few thousand, down a few thousand. Right. But this only goes one way. And the numbers are getting bigger and bigger. 1 million jobs that they claimed were created, the Biden administration, between April of 2023 and March of 2024, revised. Revised is the word they use. Well, okay, so up or down.
Now, if it were Trump, it would be a lie, but when it's a Democrat, it's revised. Yeah.
Right, it's revised. So they'd say Trump lied, and they'd be accurate. No, Trump didn't do this. But they are. So what's 1 million jobs? That's a third of the jobs created that year. Gone. They were never real. Let that sink in. 34% of the jobs were never real. So that means for that period, the average jobs created a month was 158,000. If you had to say that every month, and they know this, that would be bad news. That would be bad jobs news. So they just opted to not have bad job news by lying. And if you think about it economically, the only thing they've taken credit for, the only good news has been the jobs, and they made that up. So that'll be interesting today. We'll see if that comes out.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Unbelievable. A month after the attempted assassination of Donald Trump, which, by the way, has been memory hold. Nobody talks about it anymore. We're getting details. We're not just getting any details. We're getting details that contradict the official FBI timeline, which is itself a lie. That's what's so interesting. You won't find it reported that way here in America, but the UK Daily Mail, the first time the FBI's timeline was disintegrated, reported it exactly that way. The FBI's timeline had been a lie. In that particular case, they said the first time that the Secret Service became aware of the presence of the assassin, Thomas Crooks, was 50 minutes before the attempted assassination. That turned out to be a lie. It was actually over 3 hours. Now, how does this timeline by the FBI keep getting contradicted? That's the most interesting thing of all. It's not because they realize they made a mistake through their investigation and revise it. No, much of what we know and a lot of what has contradicted the FBI's official timeline has come from whistleblowers who are going to members of Congress. Then it gets published and the FBI changes its official timeline. In other words, we're going to put out this lie, this lie, this lie, this lie. And until it's disproven, well, we'll just have the public think it's the official timeline. This was a bombshell over the weekend, but nobody's really paying attention anymore. The official story, if you remember, was that a Secret Service sniper took out Thomas Crooks. Now, remember in the beginning, they let us think it was the two on the roof, you know, the famous picture. They let everybody think it was them. It wasn't. Well, where did the Secret Service sniper who did fire, where did they fire from? Well, we don't know. Nope. No, we've never been told. What was the person's name? State secret. Which is weird. Chris Swecker, former assistant director of the FBI, told Fox News a couple of weeks ago. He said, all this should be out. There's no trial. There was only one shooter. He's dead. So we're not building a case with evidence. Why is all of this a secret? I don't know. Now we're finding it was not the Secret Service that stopped Thomas Crooks. Wait, what? No. A police sniper potentially saved lives by shooting the rifle of Donald Trump's would-be assassin and knocking him down. Really? And the FBI neglected to mention this? Yep. We're finding it out the way we find everything out about this from whistleblowers who have had to risk their careers coming forward to put the truth out. What? I got another question. If this is not an active investigation, it's not, and the DOJ and the FBI and the Secret Service have never put anything out saying, hey, we need to keep these details classified because we're still pursuing someone or something. They've never done that. They're just refusing to put the details out. Why is this a state secret? These snipers who, you know, shot at, stopped Thomas Crooks should have already done their round of media interviews by now. They're nowhere. We don't even know their names. Why is that? Why is this a state secret? And why does the timeline keep changing in ways that make it clear that the FBI was either lying about the timeline or hiding parts of it? Why are they hiding parts of it? So bottom line, folks, what this means is the Secret Service did not stop the assassin. A local Butler County sniper did. BBC reporting a police sniper potentially saved lives by shooting the rifle of Donald Trump's would-be assassin and knocking him down. Oh, where'd that come from? A report by Louisiana Congressman Clay Higgins. The sniper's bullet damaged Thomas Matthew Crooks' gun and disrupted his aim after he took his first shots in Butler, Pennsylvania. Then, after that, I would add, when it was clear Crooks wasn't going to be able to get the kill he wanted, a Secret Service sniper killed him. So once again, Secret Service way late to the game. It took a local Butler County sniper to stop this guy. And then they killed him. The report comes as the Secret Service temporarily reassigned some bodyguards from President Joe Biden to Trump. And Trump will also be given bulletproof glass to allow him to resume outdoor rallies. Interesting. Representative Higgins' report from the whistle. Folks, why does this have to come from whistleblowers? That's so bizarre to me. These people should be able to just go on TV and do an interview. What? Why are we hiding all of this? Why has the FBI left these details out of its official timeline? And here's the next one. This is what I want to know, because they won't tell us this. Where did both snipers shoot from? We know it was not the two on the roof whose picture is now famous. Everyone thought it was them. They let us think it was them. It wasn't them. Where was the sniper? Where was the Secret Service sniper? And where was the Butler sniper? You know why we need to know that? And I think this is why we don't know it. If we learn their location, we're also going to learn how good of a line of sight they had on Thomas Crooks. And I bet you we're going to find out they had a total line of sight on Thomas Crooks. In other words, they were watching him the whole time, including when he took the shots. That's what we're going to find out. It speaks volumes that it wasn't a Secret Service sniper that first fired at Thomas Crooks in an attempt to stop him. And listen to what a difficult shot this was relatively. Representative Higgins' report said a Butler SWAT operator was the first to fire at Trump's assassin, not the Secret Service, as the FBI has been telling us, and as the Secret Service has been telling us, from 100 yards away, so 300 feet. The congressman said the sniper... So this would be the Butler SWAT sniper. The sniper, quote, ran towards the threat, running to a clear shot position directly into the line of fire. Interesting. Then in a single shot, he fired at the gunman and hit part of his rifle. This knocked the gunman off his position temporarily, but after just a few seconds, he popped back up, before he was fatally shot by a Secret Service sharpshooter. Okay, this makes so much sense. No, because there's this conspiracy theory out there that there's two shooters, and that has come on all these podcasts from interviews with people who were there who heard the shots. They did hear them. It wasn't that there were two shooters. It was that there were two snipers, and they, how do you say this? Didn't tell the truth, left out critical details, no intention of telling us it wasn't the Secret Service who took him out. Can you imagine being this butler sniper who risked his life going into the line of fire to take out Thomas Crooks and hearing that the Secret Service stopped him and you've been edited out of the story? Wow. Why can they not tell the truth about this? Why do we have to wait as Congress members find whistleblowers and learn it that way? And why is this so secret that whistleblowers have to use whistleblower protections to come forward and tell us about it? Folks, that's only done in a scandal or if there's corruption. And why don't we know these details? Folks, at the rate we're going, and I've been warning about what's going on in Europe for a while, you're watching the disintegration of freedom in the West, most especially free speech. And when you look at some of the stuff going on, you got to wonder 5 years, 10 years from now, I mean, how different will Ireland, Scotland, England be from the way things operate in communist China? I'm serious. Listen to this. And there's an interesting twist to this, too. The UK announced it will treat extreme misogyny as terrorism. I'll tell you what extreme misogyny is in a minute. It's not quite what you're thinking. Extreme misogyny in the UK will now be treated the same as Islamist and far-right extremism. Under a new government plan aimed at addressing gaps in the country's counterterrorism strategy. That's according to the Sunday Telegraph. How will they combat this extreme misogyny? Listen to this. They're going to legally oblige teachers to refer students they suspect of extreme misogyny views or expect to be at risk given their internet content, things on their phone, things they say, you know, smart aleck comments they make about women. If they are suspected of believing in extreme misogyny or going down a path that will likely predispose them to extreme misogyny, they are to be reported, I kid you not, to the government's counterterrorism program called PREVENT. This is right out of 1984. Currently, teachers, healthcare professionals, local authority staff are required to make a referral to the program if they believe someone is susceptible to becoming radicalized, primarily Islamic radicalization. They're adding categories to it. For too long, governments have failed to address the rise in extremism both online and on our streets. We've seen a number of young people radicalize. So what might be a sign that you are a radical? You watch an Andrew Tate interview. He's a self-proclaimed misogynist who was interviewed by Tucker Carlson. I bet you they catch you watching a Matt Walsh video. I bet same thing. The Home Office currently lists several categories of extremism, including Islamist, extreme right wing, animal rights, environmental, and Northern Ireland related. They're adding several subcultures to this, including what's called the incel culture, short for involuntarily celibate. What is the deal with the incel culture? It's a worldview promoted by men who blame the women of their generation for men's lack of romantic prospects. So this is a program for teachers, guidance counselors, doctors, psychologists to turn over teenage boys they feel might not be woke. I'll just bottom line it for you. Turn them over to the government. That's strange. Where have I heard that recently? They were planning a program just like it here. In fact, it may already be in progress. Department of Homeland Security, a group, America First Legal, managed to get copies of internal documents. And in them, they were trying to figure out what to do because the FBI, the CIA, Department of Homeland Security weren't so popular anymore with the American people. The American people are losing trust with them. And so they're trying to figure out how to subjugate the American people and get them to turn in their friends and family when the FBI, the DOJ, the Department of Homeland Security isn't very popular. One of the programs they came up with was to push past the mainstream media and go down to the local level with PSAs and advertisements encouraging teachers to turn their students in, not as potential terrorists, but as mental health referrals. Now, whether that program is going to be activated or just died on the vine, no one knows because they got the internal documents back in 2021, 2022 from the Biden administration. But they were talking about it. They were talking about programs where teachers could begin turning in students they felt were going in a bad direction, not in terms of mental illness, but just in terms of being not woke enough or anti-woke. So it's just interesting that the deep states of two countries were either planning this, talking about it, and now in this case, the UK implementing it simultaneously. So misogynistic worldview by men is now a counterterrorism risk, even though they can't point to a single attack by said misogynist men on women or anybody else. Retweeted this. It's from NPR, and you'll find it's shockingly familiar. It's called The Nightmare of Grocery Shopping in Venezuela, and you'll recognize a lot of our story in this story, because their story starts with inflation caused by the government. Check, we already have that from Kamala and Joe. Here's how this goes. For Caracas housewife, and again, this is NPR, so it's a liberal source, you have to believe it, you are required. For Caracas housewife Annie Valero, today is grocery day, whether she likes it or not. Here's why. It's Monday, and if Valero doesn't go now, she'll have to wait four more days to buy food. In Venezuela, government supermarkets sell price-controlled food, making them far cheaper than private stores. But Valero explains that people are allowed in state-run supermarkets just 2 days per week based on their ID card numbers. This is just like the gas lines the Democrats implemented in the 1970s. You had days on which you could get gas and days you couldn't. Anyway, the system is designed to prevent shoppers from buying more than they need and then reselling goods on the black market at a huge markup. So you got to bring your ID card number. Okay. Venezuela is rich in oil, but now poor in just about everything else. Economic mismanagement combined with low oil prices and high inflation, yeah, because of the government printing, has led to one of the most troubled economies. Many independent economists say inflation is now north of 100% annually. Yeah, I'm thinking they could do that in one more. They'd probably take them one more term to do that. Rising anger over food shortages has made grocery shopping in Venezuela a nightmare. Valero says goodbye to her 7 and 9-year-old daughters. They will skip school and stay home alone in a Caracas slum with the door locked. That's because Valero sometimes spends all day standing in line at the grocery store and can't pick up the girls after class. So for their safety, they have to miss school. Valero brings along Jeremy, her 6-month-old son. She's also joined by her husband, Yasmi Benaviti. He's skipping work at an auto repair shop to help look after the baby and ward off thieves who snatch people's grocery bags. They stop at the state-run store, and it says inside the meat department is a barren landscape. There's just unplugged display cases, flies, and a bad odor, Valero says. She settles for 3 cans of sardines. She also finds diapers for Jeremy, but checkout is like clearing customs in a hostile foreign country. The checkout clerk scrutinizes Valero's ID card and tells her to hold her index finger over the fingerprint scanner. The clerk scans the merchandise and then informs her that because of rationing, she can buy just two of the three cans of sardines. Then Valero and Beneventi must produce Jeremy's birth certificate to prove the baby is theirs, and they really do need the diapers. This is such a waste of time, and we have to do it every week, Valero says. My husband risks losing his job because he's here with me shopping. And on top of that, we can only buy two of each item. The final bill is the equivalent of less than a dollar, but that's part of Venezuela's scarcity problem. Economists say price controls make it unprofitable for farms and businesses to produce goods. Falling oil prices means Venezuela has less money to import food. President Nicolas Maduro also blames smugglers who resell cheap Venezuelan goods in neighboring Colombia. In August, he closed the border. Ooh. Now that's an upside. Do you think we could get Kamala to close the border if this happens here? I don't know if I could live off sardines, though. I have to think about it. It could be worth it because it should give the number of terrorists coming across. I don't know. I have to think about it. Anyway, Valero blames the government and plans to vote for the opposition. Well, that didn't go well. They installed him anyway. This is a past tense article. Another frustration for Venezuelans is that the shopping controls just don't seem to work. On the street, we meet black market vendors hawking eggs, chicken, and five kinds of fish, but buying just a few pounds of beef or tuna would eat up a quarter of Beneventi's monthly salary. Back home, the girls are fine, but the only food Valero has bought back is the sardines. Her family will have leftovers tonight and rely on their dwindling supply of rice and pasta over the next few days. Then Valero will attempt another grocery store run with her husband, again missing work, and the girls skipping school. All to get some diapers and two cans of sardines. Kamala can make it happen, though. I'm confident she can get this done for you here.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, at the rate we're going, and I've been warning about what's going on in Europe for a while, you're watching the disintegration of freedom in the West, most especially free speech. And when you look at some of the stuff going on, you got to wonder 5 years, 10 years from now, I mean, how different will Ireland, Scotland, England be from the way things operate in communist China? I'm serious. Listen to this. And there's an interesting twist to this, too. The UK announced it will treat extreme misogyny as terrorism. I'll tell you what extreme misogyny is in a minute. It's not quite what you're thinking. Extreme misogyny in the UK will now be treated the same as Islamist and far-right extremism. Under a new government plan aimed at addressing gaps in the country's counterterrorism strategy. That's according to the Sunday Telegraph. How will they combat this extreme misogyny? Listen to this. They're going to legally oblige teachers to refer students they suspect of extreme misogyny views or expect to be at risk given their internet content, things on their phone, things they say, you know, smart aleck comments they make about women. If they are suspected of believing in extreme misogyny or going down a path that will likely predispose them to extreme misogyny, they are to be reported, I kid you not, to the government's counterterrorism program called PREVENT. This is right out of 1984. Currently, teachers, healthcare professionals, local authority Staff are required to make a referral to the program if they believe someone is susceptible to becoming radicalized, primarily Islamic radicalization. They're adding categories to it. For too long, governments have failed to address the rise in extremism both online and on our streets. We've seen a number of young people radicalize. So what might be a sign that you are a radical? You watch an Andrew Tate interview. He's a self-proclaimed misogynist who was interviewed by Tucker Carlson. I bet you they catch you watching a Matt Walsh video. I bet same thing. The Home Office currently lists several categories of extremism, including Islamist, extreme right wing, animal rights, environmental, and Northern Ireland related. They're adding several subcultures to this, including what's called the incel culture, short for involuntarily celibate. What is the deal with the incel culture? It's a worldview promoted by men who blame the women of their generation for men's lack of romantic prospects. So this is a program for teachers, guidance counselors, doctors, psychologists to turn over teenage boys they feel might not be woke. I'll just bottom line it for you. Turn them over to the government. That's strange. Where have I heard that recently? They were planning a program just like it here. In fact, it may already be in progress. Department of Homeland Security is a group, America First Legal, managed to get copies of internal documents. And in them, they were trying to figure out what to do because the FBI, the CIA, Department of Homeland Security weren't so popular anymore with the American people. The American people are losing trust with them. And so they're trying to figure out how to subjugate the American people and get them to turn in their friends and family when the FBI, the DOJ, the Department of Homeland Security isn't very popular. One of the programs they came up with was to push past the mainstream media and go down to the local level with PSAs and advertisements encouraging teachers to turn their students in, not as potential terrorists, but as mental health referrals. Now, whether that program is going to be activated or just died on the vine, no one knows because they got the internal documents back in 2021, 2022 from the Biden administration. But they were talking about it. They were talking about programs where teachers could begin turning in students they felt were going in a bad direction, not in terms of mental illness, but just in terms of being not woke enough or anti-woke. So it's just interesting that the deep states of two countries were either planning this, talking about it, and now in this case, the UK implementing it simultaneously. So misogynistic worldview by men is now a counterterrorism risk, even though they can't point to a single attack by said misogynist men on women or anybody else. Retweeted this. It's from NPR, and you'll find it's shockingly familiar. It's called The Nightmare of Grocery Shopping in Venezuela, and you'll recognize a lot of our story in this story, because their story starts with inflation caused by the government. Check, we already have that from Kamala and Joe. Here's how this goes. For Caracas housewife, and again, this is NPR, so it's a liberal source, you have to believe it, you are required. For Caracas housewife Annie Valero, today is grocery day, whether she likes it or not. Here's why. It's Monday, and if Valero doesn't go now, she'll have to wait four more days to buy food. In Venezuela, government supermarkets sell price-controlled food, making them far cheaper than private stores. But Valero explains that people are allowed in state-run supermarkets just 2 days per week based on their ID card numbers. This is just like the gas lines the Democrats implemented in the 1970s. You had days on which you could get gas and days you couldn't. Anyway, the system is designed to prevent shoppers from buying more than they need and then reselling goods on the black market at a huge markup. So you got to bring your ID card number. Okay. Venezuela is rich in oil, but now poor in just about everything else. Economic mismanagement combined with low oil prices and high inflation, yeah, because of the government printing, has led to one of the most troubled economies. Many independent economists say inflation is now north of 100% annually. Yeah, I'm thinking they could do that in one more. That'd probably take them one more term to do that. Rising anger over food shortages has made grocery shopping in Venezuela a nightmare. Valero says goodbye to her 7 and 9-year-old daughters. They will skip school and stay home alone in a Caracas slum with the door locked. That's because Valero sometimes spends all day standing in line at the grocery store and can't pick up the girls after class. So for their safety, they have to miss school. Valero brings along Jeremy, her 6-month-old son. She's also joined by her husband, Yasmi Benaviti. He's skipping work at an auto repair shop to help look after the baby and ward off thieves who snatch people's grocery bags. They stop at the state-run store. And it says inside, the meat department is a barren landscape. There's just unplugged display cases, flies, and a bad odor, Valero says. She settles for 3 cans of sardines. She also finds diapers for Jeremy, but checkout is like clearing customs in a hostile foreign country. The checkout clerk scrutinizes Valero's ID card and tells her to hold her index finger over the fingerprint scanner. The clerk scans the merchandise and then informs her that because of rationing, she can buy just two of the three cans of sardines. Then Valero and Beneventi must produce Jeremy's birth certificate to prove the baby is theirs, and they really do need the diapers. This is such a waste of time, and we have to do it every week, Valero says. My husband risks losing his job because he's here with me shopping. And on top of that, we can only buy 2 of each item. The final bill is the equivalent of less than a dollar, but that's part of Venezuela's scarcity problem. Economists say price controls make it unprofitable for farms and businesses to produce goods. Falling oil prices means Venezuela has less money to import food. President Nicolas Maduro also blames smugglers who resell cheap Venezuelan goods in neighboring Colombia. In August, he closed the border. Ooh. Now that's an upside. Do you think we could get Kamala to close the border if this happens here? I don't know if I could live off sardines, though. I have to think about it. It could be worth it. I mean, because it should give the number of terrorists coming across. I don't know. I have to think about it. Anyway, Valero blames the government and plans to vote for the opposition. Well, that didn't go well. They installed him anyway. This is a past tense article. Another frustration for Venezuelans is that the shopping controls just don't seem to work. On the street, we meet black market vendors hawking eggs, chicken, and 5 kinds of fish, but buying just a few pounds of beef or tuna would eat up a quarter of Beneventi's monthly salary. Back home, the girls are fine, but the only food Valero has bought back is the sardines. Her family will have leftovers tonight and rely on their dwindling supply of rice and pasta over the next few days. Then Valero will attempt another grocery store run with her husband, again missing work, and the girls skipping school, all to get some diapers and 2 cans of sardines. Kamala can make it happen, though. I'm confident she can get this done for you here. Retweeted this. It's from NPR. And you'll find it's shockingly familiar. It's called The Nightmare of Grocery Shopping in Venezuela. And you'll recognize a lot of our story in this story, because their story starts with inflation caused by the government. Check. We already have that from Kamala and Joe. Here's how this goes. For Caracas housewife, and again, this is NPR, so it's a liberal source. You have to believe it. You are required. For Caracas housewife Annie Valero, today is grocery day, whether she likes it or not. Here's why. It's Monday, and if Valero doesn't go now, she'll have to wait 4 more days to buy food. In Venezuela, government supermarkets sell price-controlled food, making them far cheaper than private stores. But Valero explains that people are allowed in state-run supermarkets just 2 days per week based on their ID card numbers. This is just like the gas lines the Democrats implemented in the 1970s. You had days on which you could get gas and days you couldn't. Anyway, the system is designed to prevent shoppers from buying more than they need and then reselling goods on the black market at a huge markup. So you got to bring your ID card number. Okay. Venezuela is rich in oil, but now poor. in just about everything else. Economic mismanagement combined with low oil prices and high inflation, yeah, because of the government printing, has led to one of the most troubled economies. Many independent economists say inflation is now north of 100% annually. Yeah, I'm thinking they could do that in one more. That'd probably take them one more term to do that. Rising anger over food shortages has made grocery shopping in Venezuela a nightmare. Valero says goodbye to her 7 and 9-year-old daughters. They will skip school and stay home alone in a Caracas slum with the door locked. That's because Valero sometimes spends all day standing in line at the grocery store and can't pick up the girls after class. So for their safety, they have to miss school. Valero brings along Jeremy, her 6-month-old son. She's also joined by her husband, Yasmi Benaviti. He's skipping work at an auto repair shop to help look after the baby and ward off thieves who snatch people's grocery bags. They stop at the state-run store. And it says, inside, the meat department is a barren landscape. There's just unplugged display cases, flies, and a bad odor, Valero says. She settles for 3 cans of sardines. She also finds diapers for Jeremy, but checkout is like clearing customs in a hostile foreign country. The checkout clerk scrutinizes Valero's ID card and tells her to hold her index finger over the fingerprint scanner. The clerk scans the merchandise and then informs her that because of rationing, she can buy just two of the three cans of sardines. Then Valero and Beneventi must produce Jeremy's birth certificate to prove the baby is theirs, and they really do need the diapers. This is such a waste of time, and we have to do it every week, Valero says. My husband risks losing his job because he's here with me shopping. And on top of that, we can only buy 2 of each item. The final bill is the equivalent of less than a dollar, but that's part of Venezuela's scarcity problem. Economists say price controls make it unprofitable for farms and businesses to produce goods. Falling oil prices means Venezuela has less money to import food. President Nicolas Maduro also blames smugglers who resell cheap Venezuelan goods in neighboring Colombia. In August, he closed the border. Ooh. Now that's an upside. Do you think we could get Kamala to close the border if this happens here? I don't know if I could live off sardines, though. I have to think about it. It could be worth it because it should give the number of terrorists coming across. I don't know. I have to think about it. Anyway, Valero blames the government and plans to vote for the opposition. Well, that didn't go well. They installed him anyway. This is a past tense article. Another frustration for Venezuelans is that the shopping controls just don't seem to work. On the street, we meet black market vendors hawking eggs, chicken, and 5 kinds of fish, but buying just a few pounds of beef or tuna would eat up a quarter of Beneventi's monthly salary. Back home, the girls are fine, but the only food Valero has bought back is the sardines. Her family will have leftovers tonight and rely on their dwindling supply of rice and pasta over the next few days. Then Valero will attempt another grocery store run with her husband, again missing work, and the girls skipping school. All to get some diapers and 2 cans of sardines. Kamala can make it happen, though. I'm confident she can get this done for you here.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.